Weighing Machine was created to help you, the financial advisor or investor, reach your long-term financial goals. Each episode, your hosts, Rusty Vanneman and I, Robin Murray, cut through the market glamour to find the time-tested principles that help investors succeed.
The Weighing Machine is inspired by the classic investing saying attributed to Benjamin Graham. The stock market is a voting machine in the short term and a weighing machine over the long run. In other words, emotion and expectations drive short-term market movement, but fundamentals and valuations determine returns over time.
Welcome to the Weighing Machine.
Enjoy, and as always, let us know what you think.
On the podcast today, we are still in a bear market. So where are the markets headed and where can we find opportunities for growth?
We'll discuss the global market outlooks and also how to help investors stay calm and carry on. That's with our guest, the co-founder of Ocean Park Asset Management and returning guest, Dr. Ken Sleeper, and the firm's chief investment officer, James St. Aubin. Welcome to the Weighing Machine. I'm Rusty Vanneman.
And I'm Robin Murray. Okay, let's start with a look at the markets. What are we watching for at the moment?
Well, we are recording this days before the midterm election, and we're basically seeing the markets lots of volatility, which has been characteristic of the bear market. I do think there are a lot of short-term positives right now, including seasonals and the election cycle. However, we still have some of these big major issues, such as high inflation, and there are dark clouds on the horizon, which could bring some stormy economic weakness. So to me, it makes sense to remain diversified and to emphasize active risk management in this environment. And today's guests share that philosophy. I'm eager to hear their latest thinking.
All right. Well, let's bring them in. Ken Sleeper is the co-founder, managing director, and co-portfolio manager at Ocean Park Asset Management. And James St. Aubin is the chief investment officer over there. Ken, James, welcome to the Weighing Machine.
Well, thank you very much for having us. And we look forward to discussing the topics that Rusty brought up.
Nice. Yeah. Hi, Rusty. Hi, Robin.
Hi, James. Hi. Well, James, this is your first time on the podcast. Ken's been on a few times. And our very first question is sort of the initiation right to the Weighing Machine podcast. And that is, we need a walk-up song. So I know for Ken, he loves Tom Petty's I Won't Back Down. So first of all, Ken, are you sticking with that song? And secondly, we need James, your walk-up song.
Well, let me just jump in here real quick. Now, the reason I like I Won't Back Down is because we have a process that's time tested 35 years, and I'm not going to change that process now, that strategy that has held us in good stead for good markets, bad markets, and this market.
Good stuff.
Right on. Makes a ton of sense. I love it. Tom Petty, I think, is our most popular artist on our playlist on Spotify.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. You really can't go wrong with Tom Petty.
Nope, you can't. So James, we got to have your walk-up song.
So I'm going to do a little harder rock. I'm going to go with Stranglehold by Ted Nugent. Good guitar entry there. Good guitar solo. So I'm really happy with that option.
Do you think this is age-related?
Could be.
Ted Nugent. I feel like I'm at the swimming pool back in middle school right now. So, yeah, I love it.
All right. Good stuff. Okay. Well, Ken, as Rusty said, that you have been on the show a couple of times. But for those who haven't tuned into those episodes, please tell us about your career and the founding of Ocean Park.
Well, thank you. It's interesting that you bring that up because we're having our 35th anniversary party tomorrow. Wow. For our direct clients. We have different aspects of our business, and we've been doing this for 35 years. And for that entire period of time, our goal has been to construct portfolios for the conservative investor. That means there's probably a greater emphasis on bonds versus equities. But more importantly, I think, is that we have a risk mitigation overlay for each and every position in the portfolio. So that's key for us, and particularly in times like this. We'll probably get into it more, but during periods of time recently, we've been 100% in cash in some of our different models. Right now, we do have a few positions. It's probably about 10% invested. But the point is that we can go into cash when necessary. It's not an allocation, but it's an area that we go to when we do get sell signals. So Ocean Park is a company that we created to address the FA, the financial professional market, to help us distribute our efforts and research that we've done on risk mitigation and our tactical allocation development of different types of models.
All right. So what's new at Ocean Park since we last talked? For instance, I know you have a new chief investment officer, James.
Yeah. In fact, we happen to have him here today. Coincidentally,
yep.
James St. Aubin is our new chief investment officer, and we're really happy to have him. And one of the reasons that we asked James to join our firm is that as we grow, we really have to have a larger, a deeper bench to make sure that we're covering all the bases. For instance, a year ago now, we hired Skip Schweiss. And so he's now our CEO, and he's helping with so many of the different administrative tasks that we face on a daily basis. So we're really excited to have him. We've also added another investment professional, Ryan Harder. I hope you have an opportunity to hear from him at some point, but we're really just so excited to have James here, his skill set. And now and then he used to remind me that he was the due diligence officer at a previous firm. So every time I say, well, let's try this or let's do that. And he'll say, well, let me give you five reasons why it might be a problem. So he is really a great addition for our firm. He's sort of like you, Rusty. He has that skill set.
Awesome.
Once a gatekeeper, always a gatekeeper.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's hear more about you, James. Then you have been in the business, I think, for 20 years plus, and you work with Ken overseeing the investment management department. Can you tell us more about your background and what you do in your position?
Sure. Thanks, Robin. Yeah, my entire 23-year career has really been focused on building and managing portfolio solutions on behalf of advisors for their clients. Most recently, I spent over 7 years at MUFG Union Bank as the chief multi-asset strategist for their private bank and RIA subsidiary Highmark Capital Management, where I, as Ken mentioned, led third-party manager research as well as asset allocation and portfolio construction efforts. And then prior to that, I spent about 10 years in the consulting world, where I was at Wilshire and Ibbotson Associates, really serving as an outsourced home office, if you will, for financial intermediaries. And my role here is really, I think of it in four parts as an investment team leader, really is to be the steward of the investment process, right? To ensure that it continues to be diligently executed the way it has been for the past 35 years. Also to be an external voice on its virtues, of course, as a tactical strategy that shines in times like these. Third, I also want to promote a culture of continuous improvement, really trying to find ways to enhance and refine the process and to make sure that we are achieving the highest possible risk-adjusted returns for our clients. And then finally, to identify new product opportunities that leverage the firm's existing intellectual capital and resources.
So that's it?
Well, I'm glad we hired you.
Well, let's move on to the market. So get to the juicy stuff here. So obviously, both stocks and bonds are currently in bear markets. And in turn, balanced portfolios are having their worst year in decades. What do you feel are the major drivers of the market movement, and what's going to turn it all around?
Sure. Well, let's start with the worst drawdown in decades. I actually looked at this the other day, looking at the 60-40 portfolio since the inception of the Ag in 1976, using S&P, of course, as the equity component. And we've had four drawdowns now during that time period of more than 20%. We had the dot-com, which saw the balanced portfolio decline 25%, the global financial crisis down 36%, early COVID 22%, and now late COVID, post-COVID, if you will, 2022 down 21%. But what is unique, I think, about this time, of course, it's that the 40 and the 60-40 really failed to hold up its end of the bargain, right? Instead of being a source of ballast in a balanced portfolio to the bear market and equities, bonds were actually kind of a source of stress in a lot of ways. And of course, interest rates causing that dynamic. So what's behind this? Well, of course, it was a policy mistake that we had, an overstimulation, a shock and awe of monetary and fiscal policy that were really intended to prevent the economic ills of the lockdown. Plus, you have this pandemic-related imbalances that gave us an inflation problem that's global. It's not just here in the U.S. So 2022 has really been about dealing with the consequences of that policy mistake, really removing policy accommodation, both what I call a double whammy of rate hikes and QT at a pace and up to a level that's really not easily digested by financial markets. So think about it as like a shock and awe in the opposite direction, but this time it's intended to beat inflation. And what the Fed ultimately wants to do now as it tightens policy is to weaken the labor market and drive real wage growth negative. It is negative now. In order for inflation to come down further, it certainly needs to loosen up considerably amount more. We do think, you know, we're likely headed for a recession next year. How severe, though, is the big open question I think markets are trying to grapple with right now. And that makes for some pretty strong headwinds for equities, of course. Bonds may be in a better position, and I'll get to that in a second. But I think in order for the turnaround to happen, investors really need to know two things, to see the bottom, if you will, and two sort of dynamics. One would be the where the rate hike cycle ends and ultimately stays, which is still an open question, as we saw this week with the continued upward guidance on where the end of the rate hiking cycle will be and how long it will likely stay at that restrictive level. And then finally, what the full assessment of the economic damage that it's causing and how long that will take to work its way through the economy. We talk about long and variable lags. I think in order for the equity market to find a footing here, it's going to need to see that bottom in terms of economic data. Now, it doesn't need to get to that point where economic data has bottomed, but it will need to know sort of where the light at the end of the tunnel is going to be before we see a rally. So, you know, what makes this cycle very different from the past cycles, at least in recent history, is that there's no cavalry coming. The Fed is very unlikely to rush back to the rescue at the first sign of trouble the way it has in the past. So I think all bets are off this time. It's kind of the wild card in this market environment. But I think from a bond perspective, you've got an interesting dynamic now. We may find footing in the bond market a little bit sooner. Rates are certainly a lot more attractive than they were at the beginning of the year. And we're seeing yields on treasuries that we haven't seen since the global financial crisis. And so you may see that TINA argument, there is no alternative, working in reverse, where money coming out of the equity market, finding a home in the bond market, could put some tailwinds behind the bond market a little sooner than the equity market might find its way out of this drawdown.
Well said. So Ken touched upon this a little bit earlier. So how are the Ocean Park portfolios being adjusted given the market environment?
Absolutely. So our sell signals, as Ken alluded to, has kept us a lot of our portfolios in cash for the better part of the year. We've seen some buy signals emerge during some of these rallies, but they've proven to be short-lived. You know, we never predict when the drawdowns are going to end. We'll follow the trends. But I think what's interesting here is obviously what I call the upside of down markets is that when these markets do settle down, we are looking at lower valuations and fixed income and equities that should provide some good tailwinds for the next cycle. But again, our portfolios have been defensively positioned as you would expect them to be as we try to avoid these big drawdowns with our sell signals, our trailing stop discipline. And that keeps us, what we say, out of trouble and helps limit the exposure to these drawdowns.
You know, that's really hard for the consumer to adjust to. And it takes a lot of investor education to help our clients, both professional clients and the clients that have ultimately use our products, our models, to understand that we can't predict what the future holds, but we have a lot of history that shows that eventually this will work itself out, that their portfolios will likely not go to zero, particularly if they have accounts with us. It's just patience that's required right now. And that goes to the heart of investor education on the part of all professionals that manage money. It's key, absolutely essential.
So when talking to advisors and investors, I mean, where are the greatest opportunities on the current market moving forward? Where is there the optimism? And I guess kind of related to that, how are you keeping, you know, investors sort of calm and carrying on given sort of this backdrop of negativity?
Well, it's interesting for us. We've been in the business long enough that we were there in the 87 collapse, the tech crash, the Y2K crash that lasted 3 years. And then 07 through 09, we've been through several wars, multiple presidents. And eventually we work ourselves out of this. But I think for us, what's key is we have this defensive component, this defensive overlay So our clients, we've stepped aside. We're typically in cash, or if we can find a haven fund, some alternative that's paying better than cash, we'll do that. But we just have to make our clients aware that preserving capital is where you want to be. You don't want to have an unrecoverable loss. And again, we work with the conservative side of the spectrum. So these are folks that just cannot tolerate losses that are severe. A 10% loss, a 15% loss is severe for them and makes them feel terrible. So we do our best to make sure that we have manageable declines. You can't avoid declines, but if you have a process in place like we do, we can keep those small and manageable.
And I think that speaks to, Rusty, a lot of the genesis of the firm itself and what the problem that Ken and his partner Dave were trying to solve 35 years ago, which is, you know, to avoid or to limit the drawdown experience, both from an emotional impact perspective, right? They want to dampen that anxiety that investors have during these types of market environments, as well as the financial impact. And you think about investors that are close to or in retirement. Scenarios like this can alter the potential outcomes and longevity of their retirement capital. And that's really where Ken and Dave tried to design a process, engineer a process that was limiting these experiences. And we say we can win by not losing, or defense is the best offense. You pick your phrase there. But we've looked at the markets these days. This is really playing into the strength of our strategy right now. And it's going to be, of course, incumbent upon us to follow the uptrends when they do emerge, hopefully sustainable uptrends, and capture the upside of the market and when that rally does emerge.
I have this fantasy that we'll see what we saw in 2009 and in 2003, and that is the equity markets come back in different segments of the equity market. So it behooves us to be attentive to that and to be aware when we do get a tradable bottom and participate for our clients in a way that, again, addresses the need for good risk-adjusted returns.
So keeping investors calm, obviously, is so important right now and helping them to stay on track so they can still achieve their goals. But what are kind of the specifics of how those conversations go? I mean, advisors are getting a lot of calls right now from investors who are anxious and concerned about their retirement savings, their portfolios. So how do you explain what's happening? How do you manage expectations? What are some tips to get those conversations going?
Well, first of all, if I could pick my clients, I would pick clients that have some scar tissue, who've been through the markets before. Typically, it's a guy that's in his mid-40s or 50s, and he's suffered through declines. He's experienced the impact of severe declines can have on their mental attitude and their ability to survive during retirement. So those are the folks that it's an easier conversation because they know what it means. I really don't like it if I'm dealing with someone who's too young, who's never experienced adversity, whose neighbors have told them that making money is easy. And if you're not making double digit returns, there's something wrong with your advisor. If I could screen those people out, I would recommend that they go someplace else because they're probably not appropriate for us. But if they're 55, they want to have the money last their lifetime, they want to have their money available to help their kids, then I think they're our target. And I think that we can really help them out, have a comfortable retirement, and be successful over the long term with their financial assets. James, you probably have addressed these issues too in your previous jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think calm investors down. Now, like I mentioned earlier, over the last 22 years, the balanced portfolio, 60-40 portfolio, has seen 4 20% drawdowns. So the upside of that is that most investors are sort of used to this sort of experience, right? They've become accustomed to some volatility, which, you know, conditions them for future episodes of volatility. And of course, the last three episodes of drawdowns in the balanced portfolio have been fully recovered and then some. So I think part of the conversation you have with clients today is look at history and what does history tell you about the potential future? You know, sticking with a process, whether it be tactical or buy and hold, is probably the biggest single ingredient for success. And I've always said that what is probably the number one value add for advisors is keeping them from capitulation in times of stress. So I say, you know, this too shall pass is a perfect phrase for both up markets and down markets, honestly, not to get people too greedy or too fearful, that we have to stay the course. And that course obviously varies by client, different risk profiles and different objectives and so forth. But really just making sure that this environment does not knock them off their path is really the key ingredient to success.
That's absolutely right. Because if you have someone who gives up, they're not going to give up at the top of the market. They're going to give up at the bottom of the market. So it's all part of our investor education. It's all part of our intake discussions. And I think that it's our responsibility to make sure that a client understands what their arc of investing is going to be, and that there will be times where there will be drawdowns, there will be declines. But with us, at least, there's a process for getting back in the market when the markets start to turn up, as there is a process for getting out and moving temporarily to cash.
I have a question. I think it's basically been answered by you already, but a question I'm getting a lot, and for good reason, is a lot of investors, and again, advisors, are worried about all the geopolitical stuff going on in the world. Do you have any specific advice regarding all the geopolitical turbulence that we're seeing right now?
Well, I know that when the Ukraine war broke out, we were getting questions about that. And we've had questions like that when North Korea shoots rockets or there's an invasion. We've gotten similar questions during the Iraq war, Afghanistan. And basically, we have a robust process. So regardless of the reason, if the different positions that we own in a client account turn down enough to give us a sell signal, regardless of the reason, and regardless of what we might believe, we move temporarily to cash. And that is comforting to people to know that we're not trying to predict geopolitical results or outcomes. We're actually just reacting to what's actually occurring with their account and the positions that they own.
Right. I'll add geopolitical risks. Of course, they're knowable, and the ones that are unknowable, those events will certainly be constants for financial markets. And I think just to reiterate what Ken was saying, one of the key benefits of being a tactical manager that follows trends is that we never necessarily need to worry about the why, what is driving it. And I think even if you could predict geopolitical events or outcomes, we've seen a lot of instances where the market reaction may not be so intuitive. So it just reinforces to us why we follow trends rather than trying to make predictions about what could happen in a geopolitical arena, you know, or any other market-based arena.
Shifting gears here a little bit. So talking about the tactical trend following style. So interestingly, one of the most popular podcasts we've ever had on the Weighing Machine was really kind of focused on technical analysis. And again, there's good reasons technical analysis should be of interest. The momentum factor, for instance, has even been more effective than value investing, for instance, historically. And it isn't just about playing offense, of course. Technical analysis is about risk management. Can you talk in a little more detail how Ocean Park uses technical analysis in your investment process?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and we get it frequently. And the best way I describe it is that there's one aspect of technical analysis that's essentially trying to do pattern recognition, trying to predict the future. Being trend following, we're not trying to predict the future, but obviously with our process, we have banded moving averages, for instance, that help us stay on the right side of the market. We have stop losses. This is too many S's, and I've been up many hours. So we're going to use stop losses to move to the sidelines when a particular security turns down. So we take advantage of these aspects of technical analysis. It's just that we may be curious about the pattern recognition and all that, but that's not the way we manage money. We're not trying to predict the future.
Right. And just to contrast that, obviously, with fundamental strategy that looks more on the, you know, looking to read the economic tea leaves or the bottom-up data coming from companies and our company management, Those are things that are fundamentally based, trying to predict the future, predict the growth rate of earnings, for instance. And that works for some people. It's just not our process. And some people use technical analysis in concert with fundamental analysis. Our view and our approach is centered on trend following, which is a subset of technical analysis.
Yeah. Well, they say price is the ultimate analyst in the market, or the best analyst in the market. So do you have any other like specific bullet points in explaining technical analysis to clients? You kind of touched upon that a little bit, but it's about risk management. I guess it's primarily the way you talk about it.
That's the way we talk about it. And we have a lot of history that we can go back to and show them how we applied it in different market scenarios. And it's not theoretical. After 35 years, we do have this historical benchmarks that we can go back to and show what happened. You know, when 9/11 occurred in October 1987, we have this broad perspective that we can go back to and show how we actually managed real accounts at the time.
All right. Well, hey, let's switch gears to some of our favorite questions that we like to ask guests on the show. And the first is, in this profession, there's really a responsibility to your client's financial health and ability to reach their financial goals to kind of be on top of your game, perform at a high level. So how do you maintain your health, both physical and mental, to ensure that you are performing well?
You need to focus on James. He has four kids at home. So I don't know how he does it.
Yeah.
So I want to hear his answers for success on that question.
Yeah, I don't know what's more stressful, my home life or the markets right now. But young kids is tough. But I would say two things for me that I really rely on to get myself prepared mentally and physically. One is meditation. I do meditation every day, and I think it's a good reset or reboot button for the mind, and it really helps clear the clutter, if you will, in my head. The other thing I do is sleep discipline, which sounds a little simplistic, but I read a book called Why We Sleep by Matt Walker, and just reemphasized to me and highlighted the importance of getting to bed early, you know, eliminating some of the things that don't allow you to sleep well. And I think that from a physical and mental perspective has a big impact, even though it sounds, again, very simple thing to do, but a lot of people take it for granted and just don't get enough good sleep.
So how much sleep are you getting with four little kids?
Yeah, well, the kids, that really depends on the kids sometimes, but I try to get at least 8 hours. To me, that's important, but
nice.
I do that 50-50 depending on how early my kids get up.
Very good. You know, on the point about meditation, kind of like within that whole realm, you know, just breathing exercises, we're all data driven. You know, I think a compelling argument for it is I have one of these Aura rings. People have Whoops and stuff. You could do like one of those breathing exercises for a minute and you see your data improve. And not only that, if you really get into your data, you look at like your sleep structure and your HRV scores and all that in the morning. If you do some of that breathing before you go to bed, it is amazing how effective it is. Once you see the data, you're sold.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, you'd think getting a better physically and mentally performance would require a lot of complicated strategies, but it really comes down to simple things like breathing, meditation, sleep. You know, those things really go a long way to getting your mind in a very chaotic world into a good place.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting what you say about sleep, because I'm working and trying to make it that I get at least 8 hours sleep. And to me, it's become key. And one way I've done it is I go to bed before my wife. She'll stay up an hour and a half after I go to sleep. And I used to try and time that so to both go to bed at the same time. Forget it. Of course, I've been married over 40 years, and maybe that's the other advantage too.
That's a good tip. Well, another question we have, this is of a newer one, Ken. So, and I think it's had a pretty good response, but so both of you, like so many of us, have been around so many successful people who have quite frankly helped us get us to where we are today. So for each of you, who are some of these people, including mentors, that you're professionally thankful for, and what key lessons did you learn from them?
Well, I have several, but let me say, again, I mentioned earlier that I just came back from a conference where I had an opportunity to meet clients that use our products, our different models. And I thought, wow, I need to get our whole IM team to those conferences, because it's so telling to hear people tell why they're using your products, to say what a difference they've made in their lives. And it's a big refresh to me, and it's inspirational. And I think there's a huge value to that, to know, take it from a theoretical point of view to an actual practical view with people who are consuming what your output is. And it's just incredible. Another person that has made a difference in my life was actually when I was in scouting. I'm an Eagle Scout. And I remember there was one assistant scoutmaster who was a theoretical physicist. And I was just blown away by the questions he would ask and his thinking on solving problems. And that's, you know, over 50 years ago. And the mindset it helped me create has lasted a lifetime. I wish that I could be in touch with him so I could tell him the impact he had on me. And it wasn't that he was famous or notable, but the way he taught me to think and to look at problems has made a difference in my entire life.
And from my perspective, you know, I've been really fortunate to have so many great mentors, managers in my career. I didn't mention this at the introduction, my background, but I started college as an analyst on a team of advisors. It was my first job out of college. Didn't know much about anything other than what I was taught in school. And despite being, I would say, very green at that point, obviously, they were allowed me to attend and participate even eventually in client and prospect meetings. And I think that's really allowed me to get a lot of exposure to the practical side of investing, sort of what I call in the trenches. So that allowed me to connect the theoretical academic world to the real world, which, as we, I think, all know, is not quite the same thing, right? They're very different and have places, obviously, that blend across practice. But that, to me, was very helpful. The other person I think I would mention is my former boss at Wilshire, Victor Zhang. He was a former CIO and president of Wilshire Funds Management. He's the current CIO of American Century. And he really taught me a lot about the soft skills that are necessary to exceed in this industry and in business in general.
Nice. All right. Well, one more before we let you go. And that is, do you have any recommendations for our listeners on what they should be reading, listening to, books, newsletters, podcasts, anything like that?
Well, I guess I'll start with a podcast after you're done listening to this wonderful podcast. There's so many podcasts out there. There is actually a podcast on trend following. It's called Trend Following with Michael Covell. He does some really interesting interviews with pioneers in the trend following space, among other topics. It doesn't just cover trend following, but I think it's really a good resource for folks that just want to understand the history behind trend following and some of its virtues. So Twitter follow. I love Jim Bianco on Twitter. He's great. We subscribe to his newsletter. It's a wonderful resource, especially on Fed matters. The last one I'll mention is the Macro Compass on Substack, and he's on Twitter as well. They also do a nice job of kind of sorting through a lot of the complexities of monetary policy and central banking.
Well, for me, I'm just an avid Wall Street Journal reader and Barron's reader, and so I figure I need to be in touch with what's happening and the opinions of a wide variety of folks. So I think that all of us need to do that to stay in touch.
All right, good stuff. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. And tell us, how can listeners stay in touch and learn more about what you're doing at Ocean Park?
So Ocean Park AM, we have people out in the field. We're usually at all the major conferences. So we hope that people will come by and say hello.
Awesome. Well, guys, I really appreciate your time today. As always, it's great to get your words of wisdom from Ocean Park and how you're thinking about the markets, how you're building portfolios. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Rusty. Thank you, Robin.
Okay, well, that is going to do it for this week. Rusty, take us out with your final words.
Invest well and be well.
We'll be back soon. Thanks for listening to The Weighing Machine. And thank you for your time and trust in Orion Advisor Solutions. The Weighing Machine is hosted by Rusty Vanneman, Chief Investment Strategist at Orion Advisor Solutions, and me, Robin Murray, freelance writer and editor. If you have feedback or questions about our podcast today, please send us a note at rusty@orion.com. opinions expressed by Rusty Vanneman and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and don't reflect the opinion of or endorsement by Orion, its affiliate subsidiaries, and its employees. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for legal, tax, and investment decisions. The opinions are based upon information the participants consider reliable.